Macmillan Digital Audio and Belinda present this unabridged recording of
The Sparsholt Affair by Alan Hollinghurst, read by David Dawson. Peter Coyle, as I expected, had been much bolder, and had at once written Sparsholt a letter on the Slade School's paper, asking if he could draw his portrait. There had been no reply, though I felt, two nights later in hall, when I took a place facing the rower's table, that there was something subtly self-conscious about Sparsholt. A first uneasy suspicion in his stern young face and his upright aloofness that he might be being watched, or have turned already, in this place that was so new to him, into the subject of a rumour. Whether he noticed me or Evert casting keen, almost terrified glances in his direction, I rather doubt. He seemed to look at us as an undifferentiated and still alien mass. After hall, he quickly left his fellow diners, and I thought how easily I could have called out to him as we moved with our separate flashlights through the darkened quads. It was perfectly easy to find out more about him. In the lodge next day, I saw from the boat club notices that his initials were D.D., and from a tutorial list that he was an engineer. These first meagre scraps were somehow discouraging. Scientists and rowers moved in their own severe routines, set apart from the rest of us. But the fact of Sparsholt's instant appeal to Peter and Evert invested him, even so, with a faint if puzzling glamour. To me there was something unyielding in his surname. A word like a machine part, as Peter said, or a small hard sample, perhaps, of some mineral ore. But now I was curious about the D.D. As it happened, I stole a march on my two friends. Each morning Phil came in about 7 to open the shutters and clean up my sitting room, while I, as a rule, still lay in bed, drowsing and dreaming to the squeak of casters and the to-and-fro noise of the carpet sweeper next door. He would lay the fire and take out the china and glass to be washed up. When that was all done, he would knock and open my bedroom door in one swift movement, with a policeman's instinct for surprise. I would then emerge in my dressing gown onto a stage set exactly restored in the interval, the same the following morning. Today, as I waited for the kettle to boil, I gazed out gratefully into the quad. There was a heightened sense of relief then, even in Oxford, at having come through the night unscathed. The lights that showed palely again at the windows as the scouts went round were cheering signals of survival.